This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 200. If you've been with us since the beginning, thank you. 200 shows over the last 6 years, approximately. It's been a long time. But what's good about this show is the fact that we're finally at our season preview, and we have real proof. Football preview to talk about. But Seth, episode 200, can you believe that we've, you know, managed to find enough content for 200 shows, that we managed to do it, and then that people are actually listening? That's kind of fun.
Yeah, I can't believe people have listened to us talk for 200 episodes. But you know, it's football is a disease, it's a sickness, and we're all affected by it in different ways, and some of you are affected in a way to download podcasts of Jess and I talking about the Arizona Cardinals. So we appreciate you living through your affliction, and we'll do the best we can to continue to give you your weekly dose of Arizona Cardinals talk.
And it is the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and in our humble opinions, that's... I'm the host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. Seth Cox is the other host, our co-host, as always, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we're done with the preseason. The rosters have been cut. The waiver claims have been added. The rosters were cut again. Practice squad members have been signed. This has begun for the regular season. So this is our season preview. It's our roster reaction and 2018 season preview show. So we're going to talk about what happened on the rosters and all that happened, what the Cardinals roster looks like, the depth chart, which was just released. We're going to look at kind of our expectations for the season that's upcoming, what we're excited about, project some, you know, some numbers for player performances and kind of give us our win-loss record, which we've in a way we've done already in the past. And then lastly, we'll look ahead to week one, as the Cardinals will open up the year at the newly named State Farm Stadium, no longer University of Phoenix Stadium. It was announced on Tuesday. State Farm Stadium is the name of it. It's the naming rights deal for 18 years. The insurance company gets the name of the place, and I'm glad. If anything else, State Farm Stadium will be much easier to type, and it won't make it sound like we have a college stadium with University of Phoenix Stadium.
Right. I mean, we can, you and I talked about it before the show, the farm, it would be a fantastic nickname, but that's where the Stanford Cardinal play. But I guess, I mean, we could have the pro farm and the college farm, but you know, so SFS is a good one, like Sun Devil Stadium. Just from a super selfish standpoint, you and I talked about it a little bit before the show. It's easier to type. It makes life a lot easier for you and I. And so, you know, things like that may not matter. And let's face it, University of Phoenix Stadium was always a really stupid name. I mean, we can
some of the names that people suggested it might be, which
right.
But geez, whatever.
But I mean, naming it after a college, like such a weird thing for a pro stadium to do, like unheard of at the time. But, you know, now you've got weird stadiums all over the place names. So, I'm happy with it. I'm just happy that we can shorten it to SFS, or, you know, if we type out State Farm Stadium, it's not going to be too much effort.
It's, you know, we're selfish like that, but rosters. So we'll start with the rosters. The Cardinals got their roster down to 53 players. And I got to say, now based on our roster predictions, we weren't terribly far off, to be honest. Just a few players off, honestly.
Well, but, and you and I both, I think, hit on some that the other one missed. I mean, so when you look at it, you know, I don't think either of us have Brandon Williams. That was probably the biggest shock to us. But we had guys on the roster. You had Jock Smith, and I had AJ Howard. So, you know, we put our brain together, and we can come up with something resembling the Arizona Cardinals roster.
Yeah, and so let's kind of look at what the original roster looked like. You've got the three quarterbacks, which we expected. Rosen, you had Bradford, Rosen, and Glennon at running back. They only kept the four. Elijah Penny went to the practice squad. The receivers, they only kept five. The surprise was neither Brett Butler. Wow. Bryce Butler, if you're old enough to know who Brett Butler is, congratulations, because I remember him as a baseball player when he was playing for the Cleveland Indians and Los Angeles Dodgers. Bryce Butler, he was cut. That was kind of a surprise, as was Greg Little, meaning J.J. Nelson. J.J. Nelson was the guy they kept. Tight end, no surprise there. They kept 10 offensive linemen. They kept John Wetzel. They kept Daniel Munn. They kept both Munyer and Evan Bame initially. They kept Will Holden. They kept Corey Cunningham on the defensive line. The four tackles, the four defensive tackles they kept were as expected. Arthur Motes went to injured reserve. Sorry, no cap cappy. It was Jaquise Smith that got to stay. At linebacker, the surprise there for me was Scooby Wright. But instead of Scooby Wright, they did keep Zeke Turner, safety turn linebacker suddenly. And as well, they also kept Dennis Gardeck. And so for me, the real surprise with both Scooby Wright and Edmund Robinson were gone. At cornerback, they keep both Brandon Williams and Dietrich Nichols. And then at safety, they went with, and they had A.J. Howard initially before they made some moves. Now, talking just about the moves on Saturday, what were your biggest surprises and biggest takeaways from that?
I mean, just the Saturday moves, I was only surprised by really two things, and that was J.J. Nelson and Brandon Williams. Everything else, I think you and I kind of, we figured it out. You know, the Zeke Turner thing we figured out. I figured A.J. Howard, just based off, they really liked him in the Trey Boston role. And so when you look at it from those areas, I wasn't surprised by much. You and I kind of picked out Nichols from Jump Street, that he was a guy that really fit this roster in the Bene Benwickery role, you know, going forward after this year. And so when you're able to look at guys and you see, you know, similar players, that's kind of what you and I were doing. We were looking at this and we're going, okay, this guy kind of plays like this guy. Okay, this makes sense. You know, I think we would have been quicker on the Zeke Turner bandwagon, but I don't remember him ever playing in that dollar linebacker position. I mean, you had a bunch of guys just kind of moseying through there beforehand. And so when you look at it, it was really Brandon Williams and J.J. Nelson. I will say I was slightly surprised that they kept Daniel Munyer. And then Saturday happened and I wasn't surprised anymore, because I was like, or Sunday happened and I wasn't surprised anymore. And I was like, oh, that's why they kept Munyer. Because, I mean, you and I kind of text each other about this. We were going over the roster, and 10 offensive linemen wasn't like it was a lot. But, you know, you and I had talked about this on the preview show. We said, okay, Will Holden and John Wetzel will both be backup tackles, but they can both play guard. So how many interior offensive linemen do you need? And then they kept, you know, they kept both Evan Bame and Munyer. And we were like, huh, that's weird, because you now have, you know, a bunch of guys that really only play one spot on the line. I guess Munyer can be the interior swing guy, but, you know, he didn't show exactly glowingly in the preseason at center. He played better in the second game against Denver's, you know, cut squad. And so you can kind of make a case for Munyer. Nobody else was really a surprise, because we had kind of expected the roster to turn out the way it did.
To me, the big thing was when I saw the roster, I'm like, wait, they kept Bame and Munyer, were they that uncertain about who the backup center was? And that to me was like, that didn't make any sense at all. Then Sunday happens, and I don't know why they went the way they did. Maybe they were trying to find a trade partner for one of them to pick up something. I mean, they managed to pull off, what was the name of the guy who was briefly in camp last year, traded to the Ravens?
Oh, Tony Bergstrom.
Yes, Tony Bergstrom. They managed to trade him. They didn't get anything from him at the end, but they did manage to trade him. Tony Bergstrom, yes, that's right. Zeke Turner, like, going back to the position change, I saw him playing that position, but I just thought he was playing nickel like Buda Baker. That's all I thought it was.
Yeah, because, you didn't. That's what I mean. Like, I never really put it together.
Yeah, so because I'd seen him play at safety. He was lining up at safety oftentimes, and there was a couple of practices in training camp when I saw him. Okay, so I think it happened to be the same practice when they went all nickel and base. When they had Bynes out, they didn't bring anyone else up from the second team to play linebacker. They just kept Buda in the entire time, and so I'm thinking, oh, okay, so they're giving Zeke Turner a look at the same position. And then suddenly, boom, preseason finale. Well, and Steve Wilks said, yeah, we made the change, you know, early in training camp. I'm like, we were at training camp. We didn't see that. But I'm like, did you do that in the secret practices? Because he was playing
safety. They had quite a few of those. So
they had the secret practices, and Turner, he turned out to be super productive linebacker, and that kind of the, because I had him pegged to make the roster as a safety simply because of special teams, but now you find a niche for him as a backup linebacker, and you don't even have overloaded numbers, so it comes out perfectly.
Right, and so it looks good now. They only brought back, you know, two offensive linemen back in, and they cut two. So that was, you know, a little bit interesting. But when you look up the makeup of this team and you go kind of position group by position group, you look at the quarterbacks, you go, okay, I think that group is, you're comfortable with that group. I mean, Sam Bradford is a good NFL quarterback when he's on the field. So you're saying to yourself, if Sam Bradford stays healthy, I'm comfortable with him out there. When you look at Josh Rosen, you're excited about the future. So even with Mike Glennon as your primary backup, if Bradford goes down, I think you're still okay. Then you look at the running back room, you're really excited about that. You got, you know, obviously David Johnson, but then Chase Edmonds and TJ Logan are exciting, exciting players. And then you look at everything else on offense and you go, I don't know. I mean, you look at the offensive line, the starting unit on the offensive line is intriguing, but they're also like intriguing where you want to watch what happens before you buy in. Like, I'm all in on the quarterback and running back room, because I'm comfortable with, you know, like I said, Bradford or Rosen, if he has to be in there, and you know, David Johnson stays healthy this year. Chase Edmonds and TJ Logan offer a lot of as backups, and so you really like that. But when you look at the offensive line group, you go, I could see this group being good. I could see this group not being good. I got to see what's going to happen. And then you go to the tight ends and wide receivers, and you just go, man, Larry Fitzgerald really deserves better at the end of his career, right? Like, can't this guy get some help? I mean, and this isn't a shot at, like, Trent Sherfield, but Trent Sherfield's your number four receiver on this roster. Like, we're talking about the roster, what, 3 years ago, where they had Larry Fitzgerald, John Brown, and Michael Floyd, and we were saying, holy cow, they're going to have 3 1,000-yard wide receivers. And now you look
that
at
being it. That was a big joke anyway, but
okay. Right. But now you look at it and you go, I wonder if anybody's going to catch 50 passes other than Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, last year, number two receiver on the team was Jermaine Gresham with 33.
Well, and think about it. It took him all season to beat Andre Ellington, who was traded during the season. So, I mean, obviously David Johnson's going to be a large focal point of the passing game as well, but and I'm super excited about Chad Williams. I really am. I thought he did a nice job in training camp. I thought he had a really nice preseason. You're excited about what he offers. You're cautiously optimistic about the rookie receiver curve for Christian Kirk, and you realize that anything over 30 catches is just gravy. Because, I mean, it's really not common for a rookie to put up big numbers as a wide receiver. But, you go to the tight ends and you go, is Jermaine Gresham really ready? I mean, I know they brought him off PUP, but is Jermaine Gresham ready? And then you're excited about Ricky Seals-Jones, but, like, cautiously optimistic. You'd feel a lot better if he wasn't your number one tight end. And then you have Gabe Holmes, and you're like, okay, that's your standard blocking tight end. So when you look at it, like I said, after the QBs and the running backs, you're like, all right, I got to see a lot before I get excited. But man, that quarterback and running back room is exciting.
It is. And what I'm kind of intrigued about is the work they did on waivers, because they managed to land a tackle that Ray Brown is familiar with, Blaine Clausell, who spent time with the Panthers. And he's a monstrous tackle, 6'6", 330. And I think and then they added that Jeremy Vunovich, 16 game starter last year at guard for the Colts. And now they put him as the backup swing guard, which makes you feel much better about at least the interior depth. Obviously Daniel Munyer and Evan Baim and Will Holden, are let go, which something I've kind of had my eye on this entire offseason is the fact that apparently this coaching staff just did not like Evan Baim.
They obviously were very, I think you texted me this, or maybe this was in a group chat with you, but I think it was you though that said Ray Brown clearly has a strong voice in this offensive line room. And I would agree with that. And honestly, I'm happy about that, because you look at what he did in Carolina. I mean, you look at what he did in Buffalo and San Francisco and Carolina. I mean, all those offensive lines were 100% better when Ray Brown got there. And so when you look at that, you say, okay, let this guy pick the ingredients he's working with if he's going to cook you a meal, right? And so, and so instead of getting these really smart, versatile offensive linemen that can maybe play guard or center or tackle or guard, get nasty, mean guys that are athletic and strong, and then see what they can do. Like, see if Ray Brown can teach them what to do, as opposed to they know what to do and just physically they're too limited to.
Yeah, and fans are kind of giving the Cardinals some guff about what they've done with the offensive line over the years, because now they have, like, no one left. But the truth is, outside of, Jonathan Cooper was a sad story, and he was cut again. So the Cardinals threw him away. The Patriots threw him away. The Browns threw him away. The Cowboys gave him a chance, then threw him away. Then the 49ers have now thrown him away. So that was a failure, for whatever reason. He wasn't mentally – couldn't handle coming back from the injury or whatever. DJ Humphreys looks like he's going to work out. Looks like injuries have been an issue. But the first-round guys have been super athletic. After that, with the exception of this year with Mason Cole, they've never drafted any other lineman on day two. And so everything is a day three throw in. Before I kill, because I'm not going to kill the Cardinals for their day three picks. Because because day three picks are they're toss-ups. And I'm not even upset this year. One of the things we haven't even talked about is the fact that Chris Campbell, six-round pick cornerback out of Penn State, had all the physical tools. They cut him. And not only that, they didn't bring him back to the practice squad.
No, they went and got a different corner. I mean, they didn't even – it wasn't even like, oh, they clearly weren't interested. No, they went and got a different stinking cornerback.
And he must have fallen apart because he was like halfway through the offseason. Wilkes was really intrigued by him. And then I guess once they put on the pads, it was just bad. But in fairness, if you, you know, day three picks or toss-ups, and if you can hit on the undrafted guys, like it looks like they might have at least as contributors on the roster, you're fine. If you're missing on day three, but hitting on your undrafteds, you're in good shape. And so, but there's been a profile for the Cardinals in the offensive line. They pick smart guys who oftentimes, like a Cole Toner, Evan Bain, they had to add strength. Now, Will Holden's a little bit different because now, yes, he needed to add strength, but he had some athletic upside. And it was as what was shared by it. Was it Justice?
Justice Mosqueda, yeah.
Who put out there like his athletic profile matched Jared Valdir, a kind of a rare mix of size and movement, but I don't like if we're gonna see this, and I think we're now gonna see a different lineman drafted by the Cardinals, and I hope it's because of Ray Brown. So they're gonna look because this year they drafted Corey Cunningham, super athletic, super strong, and so. Maybe the change is from the smart, versatile, maybe a little bit under strength. And there you think, okay, we can bring that up. They're now going to go after the athletic, strong guys, maybe have one position because you look at Corey Cunningham, Mason Cole was a left tackle for most of college. And so he's a much better physical specimen for center. And then you add Blaine Clausel, who is a mammoth of a guy, 6'6", 330, to play tackle behind everyone. And, you know, I think I'm interested in seeing how the drafts happen moving forward with those late-round lineman picks.
Well, and you look at it, it's something that we've talked about on the Draft Breakdown podcast quite a bit, is that there's a theory that's floated out pretty well that it makes a lot of sense to draft left tackles coming out of college and then coach them up to play other positions. You look at the Green Bay Packers, this is actually their MO, and they typically have a pretty good offensive line. Now, when their offensive line is not healthy, it's a little bit of a different story. But so they typically have a pretty, you know, good offensive line. And the idea behind that is typically – especially at like smaller colleges or, you know, smaller D1 programs and then small colleges, is that the left tackle is the best athlete on the offensive line. And so they're typically just the best player on the offensive line. And so you see that mentality and that it sometimes can work in this way.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the baseball theory is you draft a bunch of shortstops because oftentimes they're playing shortstop because they were just their best player. If you look at the kind of the rest of the roster and how things look, I was surprised because actually what I sort of expected to see, I expected something like along the lines of what happened on the offensive line when they added the player, because they picked up two off waivers. They signed Zach Moore as a free agent at defensive end. Now, they ended up wave injuring Vontarius Dora, that's a bummer because he looked really good in the preseason. And A.J. Howard, never mind that the Steve Wilks had said that they came out of that fourth preseason game without any significant injury. Howard, I knew that, and I think it was injured his quad or his groin. And now they're wave injured, so they're going to revert to injured reserve. So we'll see if they stash him like they did Eli Buka for a year, or if they end up giving him injury settlement, because those guys, they kind of flashed. It would be good to see them in a year. But ultimately, I think I like the balance of the roster. I was surprised that neither Dietrich Nichols nor Brandon Williams got cut. And then with the depth chart that came out today, we find out that Brandon Williams is ahead of Dietrich Nichols. And so there's still a little bit of love for Williams in terms of cornerback, and it might simply just be because of special teams. So I was interested in that. But across the board, you know, what we've got on the roster, and then when we add the practice squad, so they brought back seven guys on the practice squad. Biggest take, the biggest surprise for me is they kept Charles Knauf, Chad Knauf. That now they've got four quarterbacks that are going to have to figure out how to use in practice.
I don't think there's much question about how they would – how they're going to use them in practice, because the reality is there's going to be quite a bit of time off for Sam Bradford. And then I think the other reality is they're not going to ask Mike Glennon to do a whole lot. I mean, we saw it kind of in the preseason, because you and I – you know, we asked a lot of questions in the preseason about, like, what is Glennon doing? Because he doesn't seem to be doing anything on a lot of these days. Like, we go to practice and he'd be standing around and kind of watching everybody do stuff. And you're like, is he hurt? And I know he had, like, an arm something. Like, it was a forearm, right? Like, yeah. They didn't even really give us a clear answer on what – oh, he's got a forearm. Okay, what's wrong with his forearm? Like, what's going on with his forearm? So I mean, I think Knauf is going to get kind of that scout QB look, and you'll have days where Glennon gets work with the twos. But other than that, I think Knauf's going to get the bulk of the scout QB work while he's on the practice squad.
And then they bring in a couple guys I've never heard of. Elijah Penny's back on the practice squad. One of the big takeaways, in fact, for me, was not what had the Cardinals did with the rosters, what the other teams around the league didn't do. And that is, of all the players that the Cardinals cut, only one was claimed off waivers, and that was Tavier Thomas, cornerback. I think it was out of Ferris State, undrafted kid. And then no one else even landed on practice squads until Tuesday, when Evan Bain landed with the Rams. And I am partially convinced that that is every bit as much about some advanced scouting for the Rams who play the Cardinals in week two than it is about having Bain on the roster. Sure, I mean, he's an interior lineman who's got some upside as a center, but I think it was almost as much, and we'll see if he's standing, you know, the real telling thing is how long he stays on the practice squad.
Yeah. And we'll see. You know, I know that Matt McCrane had a workout today, I believe it was, with the New York Jets. But it goes back to what you and I have talked about on this show a number of times. And that teams don't really like other people's trash. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. But when you look at it, they're not interested in undrafted free agents or, you know, late round picks. When you look at the guys that the Cardinals signed, I don't think any of them were rookies, right? I think all of them have NFL experience. Practice squad wise, yeah, I think both practice squad and outside of their rookies that they brought back, but practice squad and guys that they signed to the or claimed on waivers, they're all guys with NFL experience. So there was not really much looking for or interest in all these undrafted rookies.
And well, I think it's a case where the only time that they get picked up is if that particular team. So clearly I would have to say that the Browns probably had interest in Thomas when he came out for the draft. I mean, that would be the only thing that made sense.
Well, so, and it was odd, and this isn't a shot at Tavier Thomas. Awesome for him. Congratulations, man. But it's crazy to me that they claimed him. So they clearly thought a lot of him, because he has to be, or no, he doesn't, because he wasn't on the practice squad yet, but they claimed him, so they gave him a spot,
yeah,
on the roster. So I mean, they could technically still cut him, but yeah, they gave him a spot.
So yeah, and so with that kind of wraps up what we're talking about with the rosters. Next up, coming up, the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will talk about our season preview, excitement, worries, and we'll talk some projected performance. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time for our season previews. We talk rosters, but now we're actually to the actual year of real football. The Cardinals play the Washington Redskins this week. This week, it matters. The record goes on. The win, the loss, it counts. Player stats start accruing for real. So if Patrick Peterson gets a pick six, it actually counts as a pick six in his stats. So let's kind of talk about what are you most, and we've talked a little bit about it, but what are you most excited about for this Cardinals team?
I think the biggest thing for this team is that you're excited for change. And it's not like the Cardinals were needing change outside of maybe like a younger quarterback or just some health, but you know, it's always exciting to get change when there becomes stagnation. And in 8-8, 7-8-1, you know, kind of is the definition of stagnation. It's the definition of average. And so all of a sudden you're like, okay, something to be excited about, something different. And it's just a different mentality from the team. I mean, something you and I have talked about, whether we're talking on this podcast or doing spots around the country on radio, is that the mentality and the energy around the team is a lot different than under Bruce Arians. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, you can't say too many negative things about what Bruce Arians did in his time here, but there's a marked difference in just the energy and in the level of enthusiasm from a number of the players.
That is absolutely true. I think part of that is because it is new. You went from having a successful team to now a team with change, and they're kind of re-energized with obviously David Johnson coming back. The fact that they got a quarterback of the caliber of Sam Bradford after Carson Palmer retired and drafted Josh Rosen. You've got Larry Fitzgerald still around, so he's got some excitement there. Oh, and then the defense. You've got – I think there's just a lot to like, and I have to think back to 2013, 2014. 2013 was very unknown. There was a lot of – I'm not sure what to think because Bruce Arians, it was very much kind of the show. Carson Palmer was a question mark. There was just a bunch of stuff that we didn't know about the Cardinals. And in 2014, people were excited. Then in 2015 and 2016, it became, because expectations were high, it wasn't exciting. It was businesslike. It was hopeful, but that didn't have the same type of buzz. It had a national buzz, but now the Cardinals have no national buzz at all. And so, but I'm excited. I'm excited for what could be, because I believe that this team, I don't think they'll be great. I think they will be a pretty good team, a competitive team, if things go right. So that means Sam Bradford stays healthy, David Johnson stays healthy, and that the defense plays what we think it will be. And so I'm excited to see what this defense does. Can they do what James Betcher's defenses did and look good in terms of analytics, and then also have that translate into points avoided? And how good can David Johnson be this year? And will Sam Brad? So those are things I'm excited for. Now, well, what are you?
I think you have to be super excited for the David Johnson kind of reemergence, because we don't know what we're going to get with him. You know, it's, we know how talented he is, but it's a brand new offense on top of that. So we've seen him have a heavy usage in the Bruce Arians offense, but now we're talking about obviously the Mike McCoy offense and how that's going to play into things. So it should be interesting, and it should be kind of fun to see how it goes.
Now let's turn the page and talk about, well, what are we worried about? And I think worry number one for both of us has to be the health of the team, because not even just Sam Bradford, but the fact that this team has suffered key injury after key injury the last couple of years. It's just been all the wrong luck. And that's what has me concerned, because we know that the depth isn't great. And so if they end up with another key injury or two, how much will that derail things is what I worry.
Well, I think you're always worried about that with this team, with the way they built the roster. I mean, we're not talking just about Sam Bradford. You know, let's be honest. We're talking about, what, 4/5 of the offensive line has missed over 60% of their available starts the last 3 seasons. It is one of those situations where you like the names, you just worry about the availability of these guys, because that is something we talked about, is and it explains why they went after a guy like Vujovic and Klausel, because I don't think they were comfortable with their backup offensive line after what they saw in the preseason. And so when you see that, you know, it is a concern. Obviously, if like one of their stars goes down, you know, it is what it is. Like, you can't, no team can really overcome those things. And you might say, well, the Cardinals went 8-8 without David Johnson last year. And yeah, and they picked 15th and didn't make the playoffs. So they didn't really overcome anything. They just had a better season than they should have had without David Johnson. So, you know, if they lose a key player, then that's different than, you know, I think that's different than the concern we're talking about, which is, you know, Sam Bradford, DJ Humphries, Mike Iupati, Andre Smith, even Justin Pugh. I don't really have a, you know, you've talked about it quite a bit. There's not really an injury concern with David Johnson, because it's two different body parts on two different fluke plays. You know, and so when you look at it from that side, it's not, you're not concerned about, oh, if they lose their star, they're done. You're worried that the injuries are going to mount, and then those stars stay healthy, but they have no, you know, reinforcements there.
Right. And there's another thing I forgot to mention about that I'm excited about. And I am still bullish about Robert Kamdichie. Now, am I concerned about those little dinky injuries that seem to send him back? Yes, I am concerned about that, but I'm still super excited for what his potential is, because I think I get the vibe, I get that feel that he's got it put together. But then again, that becomes the concern is, well, what if he doesn't? Because we know that the Cardinals were going to have a good pass rush from Chandler Jones. What if nothing else happens outside of that? You're going to have a great Chandler Jones. You're going to have a great Patrick Peterson. What if nothing else materializes and then they're just okay? And this defense is going to have to be good for this team to be decent.
Right. And this, the other thing I'm excited but kind of concerned about in the same way is the progress of Hassan Reddick, because we saw the usage of Darren Buchanan was really interesting in that single half of the preseason he played, and he was all over the field. And you sit there and you think to yourself, Reddick's even bigger, stronger, and faster. Like, imagine him doing that stuff now, right? And so you want to see that step. So I'm excited to see if he can fill that, you know. And I don't want anybody to, you know, say Seth said Hassan Reddick's going to be Luke Kuechly. No, but if he can play in a similar role to what Kuechly did in Carolina, I'm not expecting him to be Luke Kuechly ever, because we're talking about a Hall of Fame level type of player Kuechly is right now. But, you know, can he fill a similar role and his versatility be used in the same way that Kuechly's is in Carolina? Because like you said, you are comfortable with Jones. I like Mayoa and I like Smith. And if Golden is healthy, that's even better. And when you look at it, you seem, you know, it's the spot we've been talking about, the defense of the secondary. It just seems, it seems like it could be really, really good. Like, not good, like bordering on great. But you have questions in that linebacking corp, and one of the keys to this Wilkes and Holcomb defense is having linebackers that can drop into coverage and make plays, but then also blitz the very next play. And so, you know, Reddick's growth could really determine whether or not this is a good team or a playoff team in 2018.
Now, in terms of projections, let's talk about record projections. I've been on the record on this show of saying several times that I think the potential of this team is at the worst case scenario 6-10, with the potential to be as good as 10-6, and that's kind of the ceiling and the floor for if things go all badly, like if thing goes wrong or if everything goes well. I still can't comfortably predict something better than 7-9 as the record, but I kind of see it happening to where they are, you know, 7-6 going into December and those final three games. And then they lose though, because they have to play the Falcons, the Rams, and the Seahawks. Two of those threes on the road, and with the one at home being the Rams, who, you know, are sort of expected to run away with the division. I see them being competitive up until December, and then we'll see what happens. I still can't make a predict. I can't project them to win more than seven games, even though I think it could happen. That's where I'm at with this team.
Yeah, and I go back and forth. I think, you know, I've always said, like, if you give a projection, you're really talking about a four win window, so to speak. So like we say, if we're at 7-9, five wins would be depressing, but it wouldn't be shocking, and nine wins would be good, and it wouldn't be shocking. And that's kind of where I am at too. Like, I could see this team, you know, struggling out of the gate, even, because there are so many key pieces that played so little together. I mean, you look at offense, Fitz even get to like 20 snaps in the preseason?
I don't think so. It might not have.
And you know, I'm not saying Fitz needed the work, but I mean, we're talking about another new quarterback for Fitz. You know, David Johnson played two preseason games. The offensive line, like we said, it looked really good. It looked not so good. It looked bad. And then you're like, okay, so what is this offensive line? And then defensively, I mean, we haven't even seen Robert Kimdiche and Corey Peters and Olsen Pierre to an even, and Marcus Golden play with Hassan Reddick and Deion Buchanan and Josh Bynes. I mean, those guys haven't even all played together yet. So there's going to be a lot of moving parts. So they could get off to a slow start a la, you know, the Bruce Arians start. What did they start again? Was it 3-5?
3-4.
3-4. Yeah, and so, but then you look at the back end of their schedule, and that's kind of where the meat of the schedule is. Like, they got to make some hay early in the season. And like you said, if they're at 7-6, that they probably started off, you know, closer to 4-2, or maybe even like a 5-3, and then maybe hit a road slide down the stretch. Cause that there's a middle part of the season where they have four games where you're like, I don't know if they're going to win a game in this little stretch. And that is something that could happen. But in the same way, it's also fresh and new. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing these like huge discrepancies in their expectations from Vegas and, you know, and odds makers and stuff like that. I mean, you're seeing like, oh, the Cardinals are, you know, what, fifth or sixth lowest to win the Super Bowl, but then they're like second highest to have the first overall pick. So, I mean, people don't think they're going to be good. They don't believe in them, but also in the same way, they're like, there's a chance they could be awful. And it's like, I mean, you and I have talked about it quite a bit, barring an onslaught of injuries, which is always possible with, again, with the team they've assembled. I don't see how this team is in a fight for the top pick in the draft.
That seems absurd to me. And Buffalo looks like they're going to be bad. Maybe Chicago's not going to be bad now after the Khalil Mack trade. Tampa Bay, there's questions there. But there's going to be a team that's going to be bad. There always is. And heck, maybe that'll be the Raiders after what they what they've been pulling up. But then I don't see this team being terrible. I think they'll be at worst they'll be disappointing. But like as we've said before, like having lived through as much Cardinals, you know, sadness as we have, we've seen 3-13, we've seen 4-12, we've seen 5-11, we've seen 5-11 after starting 4-0. So I don't see any of these teams being nearly so dreadful. Now, what about player projections? And let's think a little more opposite. So I have them pegged at 7 wins. They can win between 6 and 10, in my opinion. But player projections. Let's talk David Johnson. How good do you think David Johnson is going to be this year?
I see him improving his rushing stats because I think they, again, with health to the offensive line, they've put a lot of effort into this offensive line to make it a strong, aggressive run-blocking team. And so I think we're going to see closer to like over 4.5, you know, 4.7 yards per carry. Right around 1,400 yards rushing. But I think we'll have a slight dip in the receiving game. I think you'll be more in the, you know, he'll probably still catch 60 to 70 passes, but he'll be around, you know, 700 yards. So 2,000 yards total, but I think it's going to be more from rushing than receiving this time.
And I'm kind of there. He got the 1,200 yards, 1,239 a couple of years ago. I'm going to say he's going to be in that 1,200 to 1,300 range again. And maybe it's simply because they're going to like Chase Edmonds enough to give him a few carries. And so he won't quite get as many carries. And I think it'll be about 900. I don't think the thousands couldn't quite be. He could do it. He could do it. But if Chad Williams is better than expected, and if Christian Kirk can do a few things, and if Jermaine Gresham, and so if those guys are better than what the core was a year or two ago, then it'll be harder to get him all those receptions, especially since he probably will be taking more. He probably won't run as many receiver routes as he did with under Bruce Arians. Not as many. He'll still do it. I just don't think he'll do it as often. So, you know, 75 catches for 95 yards, or maybe even like 85 catches, but for only 900 yards. Still kind of the 2,000 to 2,100 kind of total yards, but not quite. So kind of right around what he did in 2016, in my opinion. Now, what about Sam Bradford? He's kind of right at there. You can pencil him in for 35 or like kind of 33 to 3,900 passing yards. Do you think he can crack it? You think he'll be able to crack 4,000?
No, I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to want him to crack 4,000. I think it's going to be a ball control, heavy run, short pass offense. I think he's going to. I said last week, I think he's going to complete close to 70% of his passes again. Like 68% of his passes, I think he'll complete. I just don't think it's going to be too much in terms of yardage. I mean, he's going to be near the bottom of the NFL again. And what is it? AYP or whatever that stat is that people love to quote. And so, I think he'll be right around 3,500 again. If he plays all 16 games, right around 22, maybe 24 touchdowns. I think 24 touchdowns would be a career high too, wouldn't it? So
yeah, his high is 21.
So, you know, maybe he sets a career high in touchdowns because they work, you know, some stuff in the red zone to Seals Jones and Fitz and David Johnson and maybe even like a big guy like Trent Sherfield. But I still see this more as a ball control offense that takes advantage of Bradford's accuracy and the fact that he limits turnovers.
And I think he'll do a little bit better. Like his in 2016, he threw for almost 3,900 yards. I think right around 3,800 is, I think, where we can peg him. But with 25 touchdowns, I don't know if he'll have as few as the five interceptions he threw in 2016.
I could see like 9 to 10, though.
Right, right. Going 25 and 10, and that's really, I mean, solid. I mean, let's be honest. It was, you know, I think Kurt Warner, his best year was 27 touchdown passes with the Cardinals, I think. And that was, let me pick that up. But I seem to think that was his best year was, I think, in terms of touchdown passes, I think it was in 2007 when he was the part-time player. And no, he had 30 in 2008, my bad. But yeah, you know, that was kind of one of his better seasons, and it was he had 27 and 17. Like, Kurt Warner still could, he could turn the ball over. He was pretty good at that too. But, you know, 25 and 10 interceptions, more than respectable. And that's a very above average play, which I think what you can expect from a healthy Sam Bradford. He's not going to be a star, and he's not going to be bad. And I don't think he'll even be average. I think he'll be an above average quarterback that gives him nice production. Larry Fitzgerald, I don't know if we can pencil him in for 100 catches. I really, really hope he gets to 91, because that would put him, that would, the 91 or 92, I think it is what he needs to pass Tony Gonzalez. That way he can be number two in yards and receptions. But I think 1,000 yards, you know, 90 catches for 1,000 yards is probably what we're going to look at. And I hope he, I hope they, if it comes down to the last week, they give him a couple of you know,
cheapies.
Cheap screen passes to get him to pass Gonzalez.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. I think we're going to be right around 93 to 97, and then it'll be pushing 1,000 yards this year, because I don't see the dynamic offense this year, and we could be wrong. I mean, we don't know yet because we haven't seen them play yet, but that's the vibe we've gotten basically since what, May, when they were running mini camps and walkthroughs and stuff. It's like, yeah, we're going to run the ball and get the ball out quick and not, you know, not do what Bruce did. And that's okay.
What do you expect from Chandler Jones? I don't think we can expect him to match what he did last year, but, you know, 14 sacks, I think would still be, it wouldn't be a disappointment, and it would still be dynamic in my opinion. So I don't know if 17 or if we can get him to pass that, but, you know, I think a reasonable expectation would be, you know, 13, 14, still in that near the mid teens and still be really great.
Yeah, I think he'll be right around 12, 13. You know, that's basically who he's been throughout his life, or through his career. And so I think that's what he'll do again.
Who's going to be after Fitz and David Johnson? How many catches can we reasonably expect? The Chad Williams, the Christian Kirk, the Jermaine Gresham, Ricky Seals-Jones. Are we going to have anyone pass outside of David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald catch more than 50 passes?
That's a tough one. I mean, because we don't know what Chad Williams is yet. I could see him getting close, like 45 for like 600 yards. And then I could see Kirk being around, you know, 40 for, you know, 500 yards. But I don't think we're going to see a guy that goes for, you know, 50 to 60 for, you know, 800 yards. I don't know if there's anybody on this roster right now. Seals-Jones, I think, is going to be right around 35 catches if he can stay healthy. Because remember, I mean, tight ends are really not a utilized commodity in the NFL unless you have a really good one. And then they're utilized a ton. I don't know how many of you that listen play fantasy football, but I mean, there's a reason that guys like Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski get drafted in round one and round two. And then the next tight end you see taken is like round six or seven. And it's just because of usage. It's not because of anything else. And so I think that's, you know, I think you're going to see that where, you know, Ricky Seals-Jones may catch two or three catches a game for 30 to 35 yards. And that's fine. I mean, if one of those is a touchdown every other week and he ends up with, you know, 35 catches and 8 touchdowns and, you know, 300 yards receiving, is anybody really going to complain about that?
No,
because that's, I mean, because I think the first thing we have to understand is there's not going to be 700 pass attempts. I mean, at least we're assuming there's not going to be 700 pass attempts or dropbacks this year. You know, there's probably going to be closer around 550. So there's going to be less numbers to go around. And if you're saying Fitz and David Johnson are going to have, you know, let's just call
170.
It
170.
Yeah. Or even 200 between the two of them.
Yeah.
I mean, now we're talking 350 targets for the rest of the roster. So, you know, you're talking maybe 50 to 60 targets per person after that. It's tough to see. It's tough to see that producing a 50 catch guy, but you never know. I mean, obviously we don't know, but I think that's part of the whole thing.
And we'll wrap up the kind of projection part coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We'll be back in just a moment. The best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and we're going to talk about the Washington Redskins. They play them this weekend. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And when we get a look at the Washington Redskins, the Cardinals have their season opener. Redskins a little bit, well, they've got the coaching staff. They've got the coach intact. But they've got a new quarterback in Alex Smith. They were ravaged with injuries, even more so than the Cardinals, I think. But they've got a running back. They got Adrian Peterson, so it's a familiar face. But Darius Geis got hurt. Their other running backs got hurt. And so you're looking at an Alex Smith with some decent receivers, a great tight end in Jordan Reed, and Adrian Peterson. What should we look for against this Redskins team this year? Does it feel like that they are as unlike we know about as much about them as we know about the Cardinals in terms of there's a lot of question marks? That's kind of how I feel.
I think we know more about their defense and their offensive, what they want to do offensively, because it's still the same coaching staff. So their defense has been steady. They have really good pass rushers in Preston Smith and Ryan Kerrigan. Their secondary's a mess right now, but they have DJ Swearinger, who will light you up. We all know that. Josh Norman isn't the player he was under Steve Wilks, but he's also, you know, nothing to sneeze at. They got rid of their best cornerback in Kendall Fuller. But defensively, they're a more known commodity, kind of what we saw last year. But I think the one difference is they won't have Blaine Gabbert and Adrian Peterson, you know, going against them. Offensively, we know what Jay Gruden likes to do, but I don't know what he has to do that with now. Their wide receivers are a bit of a mystery outside of Jameson Crowder. I think what's the guy's name? Their tight end that's really dynamic and always hurt.
Jordan Reed.
Isn't he already banged up a little bit? Trent Williams has not played a ton the preseason. So, I mean, they've got some injury concerns on the offensive side of the ball. And then they have Alex Smith, who's, you know, he's kind of in the Sam Bradford realm, right? Like, very conservative quarterback, not going to take a lot of chances, going to be careful with the ball. The difference is Smith is
he's a winner.
He's been healthy as well.
Yeah. And that's like the main thing is, you know, you look at the two of them, the thing is that Bradford's teams are always middling while Alex Smith's teams always win games. They win a lot of games in the regular season and then not in the playoffs.
Right. And so, you know, when you look at this, this is a prime game where Alex Smith comes out, goes, you know, 28 for 38 for 210 yards and 2 touchdowns and plays really conservative dink and dunk ball and drives Arizona Cardinals fans crazy. I mean, I'm probably going to be completely wrong because I'm going to say this out loud. I don't expect the running game for the Skins to do anything with Adrian Peterson back there. against the Arizona Cardinals. So I'm probably going to be really wrong about that. I'm just warning everybody now. But when you look at this, it's the first game of the Steve Wilkes era. It's at home at State Farm Stadium. There's going to be excitement in the air. There's going to be a high level of energy. I think we're going to end up seeing kind of a defensive struggle in this game for both sides as offenses try to find their way with new personnel. And in that way, I think that complements the Cardinals. And I think that they pull out like a 18-19 to 13 type of victory.
And I have it pegged for, I think it's 23-13. So you're getting a lot of field goals. Hopefully Phil Dawson makes them. But I think you'll see a play or two break down the field. And I think what you'll probably see from the Cardinals is see them be successful offensively and then sputter. And then defensively, they will do well and maybe give up a big play or two just because of the new scheme and new system that'll cause a miscommunication. And so they'll get one big play in the passing game, and they'll get two, and then the second one will come in the passing game, which would allow, you know, Adrian Peterson to bust it in from 2 yards out. But I don't expect a big game from Peterson. We know he can bust out for big games, but I don't think he's going to, you know, if Corey Peters healthy and if their linebackers are right, this Cardinals defense should be hard to run on.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I really expect quite a lot from Robert Kymdicha. Corey Peters is back and healthy. I think we're going to get a really tough showing up front, and it's going to be, like I said, I think it's going to be the Alex Smith, like, 4 yards in a cloud of dust offense where he's just throwing short crossers to Jameson Crowder and, you know, maybe gets a big play from Josh Doctson here or there. But I really don't expect a ton of fireworks, which probably means, you know, we'll get like a 42-39 shootout to start the season. But I really don't expect much offensively, and I wouldn't be, you know, shocked if the Cardinals lost, but I would more be slightly disappointed that they weren't able to really start this season off on a strong note, because the Skins are going to be one of the worst teams that they'll play.
Yeah, and that this is, you know, if the Cardinals can have any success at all, this is kind of week one. Now, I am usually I'm bullish on home openers for the home team. It's in terms of if you're covering going against, go looking at the spread, that's one of those things. I don't bet against teams at home in their home opener. Even if they're underdogs, I'll pick the underdogs to cover, because there is something about that first game at home during the season. You're playing in front of your home crowd for the first time that all year. There is some energy there that even bad teams will perform well. They might not win, but they will cover. Now this game is, I think right now, is a pick'em. So I'm picking the Cardinals. And because we know they've got some tough games coming up after that, they got to play the Rams. They're going to play a beatable but tougher Bears team in week three. And I think a 2-1 start's going to be critical for them, because the wins are going to become tougher to come by as you hit the middle and the second half of the schedule.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I'm predicting a win. I'm expecting a win. I'm not going to be shocked if there's not a win, but I'm going in with limited hopes on seeing a what's the word I want to use? A very on-time Cardinals offense that keeps the ball moving and allows their defense, which I think is going to be the key all season, to win them games.
And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. That's episode 200. The next time you hear from us, we will be talking about what is hopefully a 1-0 Cardinals team moving ahead, looking ahead for their first tough division battle against the LA Rams. But with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening, and go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!